Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Russell Olson. I'm the chairman of the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks Commission, and I will call this meeting to order. I declare that we have a quorum present, and I will read conflict of interest statement. As soon as I remind everyone that's listening online, if you could be kind enough to mute your speaker, we've had some incidental chatter in the past, and I'd hate for anybody to say something you might regret. And we have it amend part of the public record from here on out. So now it's time for the commission to consider any written or verbal disclosures of conflicts of interest by current and former commission members. If any member of the commission has completed a written disclosure of a conflict of interest, the commission will consider the disclosure at this time. If any commission member wishes to verbally disclose an interest in a contract as defined by SDCL 3-23-1, a direct benefit of a contract as defined by South Dakota Codified Law 3-23-1 and 3-23-2, or any other conflict within the matter of today's meeting agenda, please identify the contract or other matter in which you have a conflict of interest and generally describe the nature of the conflict. Also, if during the meeting you become aware that you have a conflict of interest with a proposed or contract or matter, please notify the chair of the conflict and generally describe the nature of the conflict. If you disclose a conflict of interest, the commission must vote on whether or not the matter underlying the conflict is fair, reasonable, and not contrary to the public interest. You may not participate in the commission's discussion and or the vote on the conflict. With that, you've all had an opportunity to take a look at the minutes from our July 2022 meeting. They're available on our website and they've been emailed to you, and I'd entertain a motion to approve those minutes at this time.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Additional commissioner salary days. You're the person I was talking about. We'll give you a second to mute your deal. We're good now?
Oh.
All right. Any additional commissioner salaries days? I don't know. Anybody have any? All right. Good. We'll move on. Informational items on the Parks and Wildlife Foundation update. Christine, you're here.
Good.
If you'd like to come up, we'd take you right now. Welcome. You have nothing fun to talk about, do you?
Nothing at all.
Good.
First and foremost, thank you so much for having me here today to share with you an update from the foundation. But most of all, thanks for coming last night. For those listening and that are in the room with us today, last night we celebrated the 25th anniversary of the Outdoor Camp of Sioux Falls, while we also kicked off a capital campaign to expand the campus. As you may have seen last night, the campus has outgrown, or the demand for services and resources from the campus have outgrown the actual facility. So we're looking forward to adding an indoor archery, a BB gun range, an outdoor archery and BB gun range, additional classrooms, and we're revamping the restrooms, adding intern office space, et cetera, et cetera. We're glad you could join us last night. Please share the good news of the expansion, because it truly is proof of the hard work that you put forth every single month with your meetings. Anytime you're ever asking questions about outdoors and wildlife heritage, just our way of life here, the demand for the outdoor campus's services is evident in our heritage. So the more we share that story, the more successful our capital campaign will be. As you know, with any capital campaign, it takes the support of those at the top. So please consider supporting the campaign yourself. We know that our board and the Friends of the Outdoor Campus board are nearing $250,000. We're almost at 10% of the campaign right at kickoff. So we're very proud of that as well. But again, it truly is a testament to your hard work each and every month and pretty much every day being a DFP commissioner. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Just maybe remind us total goal for the project?
Yeah, so the overall goal itself will cost nearly $7 million. It's actually $6,973,000. The South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation has committed to raising $3 million of that campaign. So it's a large goal for the foundation, but I believe in it wholeheartedly, and I think we can make it.
Great. Any other questions for Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Pleasure seeing you last night and again today.
Yeah, hopefully you enjoyed the cookies. If not, I brought some of the leftovers there. I had a sugar bagel coming this morning, but it's well worth it. Local bakery.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And before we go on to number five on the agenda, I've seen a few new faces arrive in the room, and I assume that you may be here to take part in the public forum or the hearing process. And if that's so, over to the left and by the fall photo by the gentleman back here in the green, there are sign-in. You need to sign in and let us know what you're planning to talk about during your that open forum public hearing process. And as another reminder that we're limited to 3 minutes apiece. There's sometimes when we get one issue, people start to repeat themselves. And I think out of just respect for the commission and everybody else's time, if you hear a lot of repeats, you can just say, I'm on this side and here's why. But you need to sign in if you're going to speak. Thank you. With that, we'll go on to number five, Second Century Habitat Fund. We've got the executive director, Brian Brashore, is here today. Thanks, Brian, for taking the time to come give us an update. I'm sure you've got lots of great stuff to talk about, too.
You bet, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for having me. And pleasure to finally meet all you commissioners in person. Brian Brashore, Second Century Habitat Fund. I sent a read ahead, if you may or may not have got it, just so you don't have to write down and keep track of all these little tiny numbers and large numbers. A little slower year than in, you know, coming off of last year due to a lot of different circumstances, but nonetheless put a lot of habitat in the ground, which is the main goal. Over 594 acres enrolled this year into the Working Lands Program alone, with 339 of those acres up on our West River, with East River, and 225 of those are on the West River. Usually our typical West River enrollment is a larger tract than the East River, but there's more East River ones, which is an average of about 45 acres per landowner and over $150,000 contracted out to those landowners for the five-year working lands program period. And about another $45,000 in seed. So $195,000 plus invested into the program just this year alone, which brings it to over 7,500 acres in the last 3 years with $1.2 million invested in the working lands. So that's a lot of habitat, a lot of good conservation work being put in the ground across the state of South Dakota, which is our goal and mission, and we are definitely meeting that. Income and fundraising this year, like I said, Ed, not where we want it, but we anticipate a really strong finish. Right now, we got a lot in the pipeline into the federal grant realm, as well as some large private donors in the excess of $1.15 million potential. Should know the outcomes of much of those in the next 60 days. We have raised a little over $182,000 through donations this year alone. We do have a large campaign on another raffle that'll be kicking off here shortly in October with anticipation of 200 to 700,000, depends on who you ask. Some of us are much more optimistic than others, but either way, it's going to be a lot. We do have a full-size truck and a boat, so it's a big deal, and we hope to see that here in the next few weeks. If you're at the governor's center, you'll see it there as well. Motorcycle raffle concluded with our winner being a local South Dakota resident. I remember his name at the top of my hand. That brought in a little over $51,000. And this next package, as I said, will be total valued at around a little over $100,000. We have a lot of other companies that have come on board, Shields and Berkeley, to supply a lot of the fishing gear and tackle to make this thing a huge success, as well as partnership with Game Fish and Parks, which plays a big role in it, and South Dakota Tourism. Like I said, you'll be able to see that at the governor's hunt and anticipation of some other big events coming down in the spring of next year with a gala, which we are in the process of planning currently in the spring. I'm hoping to create a large habitat function conservation fundraiser in the state with support of GFMP and the governor at that time. So any further information or question?
Anybody have any questions for Brian? Thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet. No questions means we're doing our job. So good.
Thanks for your time. Number six on the agenda is South Dakota Go Outdoors update. Keith and Jody, I think you're going to tag team that one. Do we have them online, Liz? Is that the way we're doing this one? All right.
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
I can. Keith, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Well, good afternoon, Commission members and Secretary Roebling. Keith Fisk, I'm the Licensing Program Administrator. And I'm going to give you a brief update on the fish hunt side of Go Outdoors, our new licensing system, which launched last December. You know, this time of year, we're wrapping up a few of the remaining draws that we have, but we're starting to transition into what we hope to expect to be a real busy fall come October. So we're certainly prepping the system as well as license agents and those folks across the state, as well as our customers, letting them know if they haven't been into our new licensing system yet this year, to please do so prior to the hunt starting, so they have ample time to create those accounts, buy those necessary licenses, and hopefully have an enjoyable experience and an enjoyable fall. I know some of the commissioners have had questions and or concerns from customers or hunters about their big game tags not showing up in the mail yet. You know, due to a lot of other related instances across the nation with supply chain shortages because of COVID and some of those types of things, we too have experienced those types of shortages with paper and material and those types of things. So just wanted to let everybody know that our East River deer and our West River deer from the first draw, really the two largest draws in the state of South Dakota, close to somewhere between 50 to 60,000 licenses. Those tags have all been printed, and I'm happy to report that they actually dropped into the mail today, this morning. So those individuals should see those tags in their mailboxes either next week, but no later than the middle of September. And we did do some email communication with those folks several weeks ago, letting them know that we're running behind and that their licenses would be showing up in the mail about mid-September. So I'm happy to say we are going to hit that deadline. And then we've been fortunate to be able to print, you know, pretty much all of our over-the-counter licenses like archery antelope, archery deer, mentor, youth deer hunting, or youth deer licenses, those types of things. Those are all being processed as people purchase them and being mailed. So there's really not much of a delay there at all. I always remind people, you know, from the time you purchase it to the time that it gets printed and stuffed and then mail, the U.S. mail is not necessarily what it has been in the past. So, you know, plan for 10 business days from the time that you purchase it to the time it shows up in your mailbox, and you should be no delay there in getting your tag. But things are going well on that end, and we are looking to wrap up some of our remaining draws here next week. The fourth draw for our East River and West River deer seasons, that'll be conducted next week. And then right in the middle of September, we will be opening up our landowner on our own land licenses for both East River, West River, and Black Hills. We issue about 15,000 of those a year. So that's going to be a heavy lift here coming up prior to those firearm seasons starting. But yeah, those are some of the things that are going in the licensing office with our Go Outdoor system, and would be remiss if I did not thank all of the licensing staff, as well as a lot of staff across the state, whether you're a conservation officer or a secretary in the front office. Pretty much everybody has been impacted by our Go Outdoor system this year and talking to customers, answering questions. So I really do want to do a shout out to pretty much all of our GFP staff, and look forward for their assistance here as we move forward here for a real busy fall coming up. So we'd be happy to take any questions if you have them, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Thanks, Keith. Anybody have any questions for Keith? Keith, is it during the fourth round that non-residents are able to get into those leftover tags?
So, Mr. Chair, so during the fourth round, they are still only eligible for non-resident licenses that were originally available. So, for example, in West River Deer, there is a non-resident allocation. they can apply for any remaining non-resident licenses, but it's not until the fifth draw or the true leftover phase where they're available first come, first serve, where both East and West River, those licenses are then pooled and they're available to non-residents and residents alike. So the fifth draw, that'll open up around mid-September. We'll, of course, do a big email splash so everybody knows when we're going to turn those on, because there's going to be a lot of people anxiously awaiting trying to get that coveted tag come the fifth draw.
Sure. Thank you. A good explanation. Anybody else have any questions for Keith? Commissioner Spring.
On that third, fourth, fifth draw, when they're put out, is it still just one tag per person, or can they buy multiple tags?
So in the fourth draw, Commissioner Spring, residents can put up to five applications in each season. So we have East River Deer and West River Deer remaining. So an individual, regardless of what type of licenses that you have, you could put in five applications for each. And a non-resident could only put in, if they don't have a license for West River Deer, for example, they could put in two applications. If they have a Black Hills Deer license, for example, they could put in one application. And if they possess a West River Deer license, they would not be able to apply in the fourth drawing at all. But in the fifth draw, the gloves come off and pretty much it's first come, first serve, regardless of what license types that you have.
And then the fifth draw, they could put down and maybe get multiple licenses, or how does that work?
Commissioner Springs, that is correct. Again, in the fifth draw, that true leftover phase, as we call it, those licenses are available first come, first serve, regardless of what license types that you possess already. So let's say an individual has, you know, an East River Deer and a West River Deer license, and there's a particular unit that there's a lot of licenses remaining. Somebody could hop in there, and if they wanted to purchase five of those licenses and they're available, they certainly could do that, but there is no maximum number of licenses in the fifth draw.
Thank you.
You bet.
Keith, one last thing. When will people be able to start purchasing preference points for next year?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So that is hopefully going to roll out and start September 15th. And anybody that's eligible would be able to purchase all of their preference points, just like we have in the past, from September 15th through December 15th. So there's no necessary to hurry on and get on there on the 15th of September and purchase them. I mean, we've got a 3-month time period where if you're eligible, you can hop on there and purchase them like you always have been.
Great. Thanks. Anything else for Keith? Keith, did Jody have a separate part to this presentation that you're aware of, or are you flying solo?
I believe she's going to provide a brief update, I believe, as well.
I don't see that we have her on.
Otherwise,
or should we come back to her if we get her online? We'll just come back to her. We see her pop on. Liz, give me a signal, and we'll give her the opportunity to explain to us where the heck she was at, and then we'll let her talk. All right. So thanks, Keith. We appreciate your time. It's going to take us to number 7 on our agenda. Non-meandered waters. Rhett's here today, and he's going to give us an update on non-meandered waters. Could have used you this morning.
Yeah, it was nice to come back to good earth. Last time I was here, it was just standing on a knob of earth trying to envision what it's going to turn out to. It's pretty impressive. So thanks for the opportunity to come down. So just to introduce myself a little bit, maybe you don't all know me, most of you probably do, but Rhett Russell, I'm the habitat and access biologist out of Watertown, and also the non-meandered water contact for landowners in the state. So Kevin and Tom just asked me to give a little bit of an update on what we're working on for non-meandered waters. So some of the numbers, I've got exact numbers if you want them, but I'll probably do some rounding up and rounding down a little bit just to save some time here. But currently, as far as closures, we have 43 different posted closures for a total of about 5,700 acres of posted closed non-mandated water. They really range in size. The smallest closure that we have is a quarter of an acre, and the largest is a little over 1,000 acres. So they really vary greatly in size and importance to people. So those closures are located in 11 counties. Obviously, most of the non-mandated water is in the northeast corner of the state, but we do have a couple in Region 3 and possibly one in Region 2 as well. So those acreages have remained fairly consistent over the past 3, 4, 5 years, I would say. They bounce up and down by a couple thousand acres each year because it's really cyclical in nature on a couple things. Water levels, obviously, up in the northeast, what's accessible, what's not accessible. Our winters play a big factor into that. If we have what we would call a typical winter, we don't have to worry about closures in a lot of them because Mother Nature does it herself. They're not so easily accessible then. So, the weather plays the biggest factor in that, and it's driven a little bit by perch bite as well in the Northeast. When we have an uptick of perch bites and non-mandated water in the Northeast, typically our closures go up a little bit. So the good news is through this non-mandated water work that we've done, we currently have 12 agreements with landowners, and those agreements alone, those 12 agreements have provided access to 13,000 acres. So if you look at it, yeah, we have 43 closures for 5,700 acres, but the agreements that we've come to on NAMI Underwater far outweigh the closed acres currently. So other agreements that we're working on, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service up in the northeast quadrant of the state has really had an awakening, so to speak, on the importance of access to the water. It's not only for what their end game is with waterfall access, but also just for recreational use, canoes, kayaks. Yes, there's some fishing involved in a lot of them, but been working with them to add some access to several waterfall production areas up in the Northeast. And they're not your Lake Oahe boat ramps with the four lanes and this and that, but what they are is they're kind of primitive in nature, but they do provide access for that type of outdoor recreational enthusiast that isn't requiring a lot. They just want some access onto the water and to be able to utilize that. So very, very important. So the agreements we have with landowners range from a few months. Sometimes they're just for a few months during the ice fishing season. Work with the landowner on let's park them over here so they're not blocking the road over there and work with what's best with the neighbors and that kind of stuff. And then our longest access agreements are up to 10 years, and we're obligated to, we can't go any further than 10 years because of the non-mandated water legislation. 10 years is the max on an agreement for non-mandated water. So I think it's important to note that a lot of times we don't necessarily come up with a spelled out agreement and this and that, but a lot of times when a landowner comes into the office with some issues and some questions and probably walks into the office thinking I'm going to get this thing closed down like I can, a lot of times it turns into working together to address the issues, and you don't come up with an agreement, so to speak, on paper, but you come up with agreement on working with them on creating a better situation for everybody up there, including the sportsmen themselves. So an example of that is like up on Lardy Lake up in Commissioner Whitmire's area there, work with the landowner on closing one area of the lake to create a funnel to the majority of the lake and to get people off that, the road that was in issue, you know, that was causing some traffic issues and that kind of stuff. So there's an example where we, you know, I almost talked them into a closure, so to speak, as an agreement to do something positive to get them to the majority of the water. So yeah, it added to the closure list, but in all reality, it all could have been closed at one time if we didn't want to work something like that out. So those are just some of the examples of agreements that we work on. And just to wrap up here quickly, like I said, that acreage amount seems to bounce around that 5,000 acres most years. It upticked about 7,000 acres maybe at one point last winter, and then it's back down right around 5 again this year. So, and a lot of that is ice fishing. You know, a lot of this water is not accessible by a boat, no matter what the water conditions are in the summertime. So the biggest word that I use with NAMI Underwater is we're trying to respect my position is try to respect both sides, and knowing that we have tools, in our toolbox now to work on agreements, and both sides are pretty receptive to some of the agreements. And I think you're always going to have the outliers on one end or the other end on how passionate you feel about stuff. But in my world, I think things are going along pretty smoothly right now. And it's nice to have some options. There's a decade there where we didn't have any options. We were kind of flying by the seat of our pants. But now we have some options that we can try to work some stuff out. And like I said, it's led to more open acres than it has closed acres here lately. So not all situations are the same, but like I said, it's nice to have that. And when I was offered the opportunity, I'll use it that way, Mr. Hepler on tackling non-meandered water. It's a big fish to tackle, but I'll tell you all as a group that it's actually kind of fun. I get to meet a lot of new landowners and work with people that in another realm I wouldn't have gotten to work with. And so, yeah, I've enjoyed it, and it's not always. Not always roses, right, Rob? But I think we battle through it. And normally during the process, both sides learn to respect the other side just a little bit and understand where they're coming from. And sometimes we come to an agreement, sometimes we don't. Sometimes it just stays the way it was. So with that, I would entertain any questions that you have.
Great. Anybody have any questions for Rhett? Commissioner Lockett.
Yeah. Yeah, Commissioner Larkin here. Do you have a benchmark for the water levels? Do you kind of follow any of them, like Reitz Lake? You know where that is compared to 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
Sure. I've been up in the Northeast since 2000, so I can almost drive by almost any lake and give you a benchmark of it's up 2 foot, it's down 2 foot, this and that. There are several lakes, standard lakes, in the Northeast that do have benchmarks on them that DNR does measure. Those aren't non-meandered water though. The non-meandered water ones, it's typically looking at lake features. Like Reitz Lake, we have a boat ramp on Reitz Lake, so it's pretty easy to tell, hey, we're up 2 foot from last spring, or we're down 2 foot from last spring, or water's dropping fast and that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of rocks along the road, but I can tell you if the water's up and down in Northeast South Dakota. So I've pretty much been on all them roads with flooded property and can gauge it pretty well.
How do you, where are we at right now? What's your opinion? Are we
sure? So
on the higher end or the lower or medium, or give me a little background.
Yeah, so I'll give you the honest truth response is the north half of region 4 is up. Like you go into the Lynn Lake complex and some of those, that enemy swim chain, Blue Dog, those are all up. Rush, Bitter, all those lakes are up. You go on the southern half of region 4 and it's probably a little bit on the other end. We're probably down a little bit. So like a Lake Ponset right now, is probably right at the ordinary high water mark, and last year would have been about a foot over at this time. So that's the great thing about having such a huge chunk of land to try to manage, or water to try to manage. Is normally half the region I work in, I'm battling floods, and the other half I'm battling more water. So it's always fun.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions for Rhett?
Oh, Kevin's got one. Sure.
Oh, Commissioner Whitmire, and then Secretary Roebling.
And not as much as a question, I guess, but thank you, Rhett, for the work. I know it's been a lot quieter. It's been nice, and that word respect that you said, that goes a long way. And I know for the fishermen as well, they're enjoying it much more, knowing that everything is smooth, and it's helped out tremendously. So thank you for all the work.
Appreciate it. Good thank job. You.
Secretary Roebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to echo Commissioner Whitmire's comments as well, Rhett, and the rest of the team up there in the Northeast and really the Southeast as well. All the folks that have been working on this issue for the course of the last 4 or 5 years, thank you. It's been a very successful implementation of a great piece of legislation that finds that balance. And I just want to say thank you to all the staff out there. And like Commissioner Whitmire says, it's respect, finding balance, and I feel like we're doing a very good job of that. So thank you, Rhett.
Well, it's much appreciated, and it's not just me. Obviously, it's GF&B is a big team, and not me underwater. Goes all the way down to the secretarial staff, you know, but I rely a lot on Habitat staff and law enforcement officers, and it takes all of us to do it. I'm just kind of the face that they come in and see up front, but there's a lot of There's a lot of minions, so to speak, in the background there to help them work on it. And let me go on the record of thanking all them, so that I'm not buying them all lunch or anything, but I thank them. So.
Very wise man, Rhett. if there's no other questions for Rhett, we'll let you.
Thank you for your time.
Take care until the next time we get to see you.
You bet. Hopefully it's soon.
Yes, sir.